I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The bottom line is that there's no legal basis for attacking these boats and the people on the boats. If this were a war, this would be a war crime. But because it's not a war, it's just murder.
Pressure is growing on the Trump administration to release video of a U.S. airstrike on September 2nd that killed two men who were left shipwrecked in the Caribbean after an earlier U.S. strike on their vessel killed nine people. We'll speak to war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody. Then to Arizona, where ICE agents fired pepper spray at newly sworn-in Congressmember Adelita Grijalva as local residents protested another ICE raid.
I was here. This is like the restaurant I come to literally once a week, and was sprayed in the face by a very aggressive agent, pushed around by others. When I literally was not being aggressive, I was asking for clarification, which is my right as a member of Congress.
Plus, we look at Attorney General Pam Bondi's memo calling for law enforcement to target a wide range of what she calls extremists in the United States, including those who show, quote, hostility towards traditional views on family, religion, and morality. And we'll talk to former EPA official Judith Enck, author of the new book, The Problem with Plastic, how we can save ourselves and our planet before it's too late.
Plastics are damaging our health. They're showing up in every parts of our body. They're making climate change worse. And they're a major problem where they're produced in environmental justice communities.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth defended the September 2nd double attack that killed 11 people aboard an alleged drug smuggling boat in the Caribbean, including two survivors of the initial strike. Hegseth defended the Pentagon's actions, even as he continued to deny reports he issued a verbal order to kill all crew members aboard. Hegseth spoke from the Reagan National Defense Forum in Simi Valley, California, Saturday.
What I understood then and what I understand now, I fully support that strike. I would have made the same call myself. Those who were involved in 20 years of conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan or elsewhere know that re-attacks and re-strikes of combatants on the battlefield happen often.
Hegseth also refused to say whether the Pentagon would release video showing the follow-up attack on September 2nd. That's despite President Trump's statement last Wednesday that, quote, whatever they have will certainly release, no problem. Meanwhile, CNN's reporting that Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley told lawmakers last week the alleged drug boat on September 2nd planned to link up with another larger vessel that was bound not for the United States, but for Suriname. On Friday, Amnesty International said the focus on the September 2nd double-tap strike had obscured the fact that all of these strikes had been illegal under domestic and international law. Amnesty wrote, quote, all of them constitute murder because none of the victims, whether or not they were smuggling illegal narcotics, posed an imminent threat to life. The Pentagon says it's carried out 12 strikes, killing at least 87 people. A senior Hamas official says the group is ready to discuss freezing or storing its stockpile of weapons as part of the ceasefire deal to end Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. The overture came as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said several key issues still need to be resolved before he'd commit to the second phase of the U.S.-backed ceasefire, which he's planning to discuss with President Trump at the end of December. On Saturday, Qatar and Egypt called on Israel to fully withdraw from Gaza and for an international stabilization force to be deployed. This is Qatar's Prime Minister, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani.
Now, We are at a critical moment. It's not it's not yet there. So it's what we have just done is a pause. We cannot consider it yet a ceasefire. A ceasefire cannot be completed unless there is a full withdrawal of the Israeli forces, there is stability back in Gaza, people can go in and out, which is not the case today.
Meanwhile, Israeli forces are continuing violent raids on Palestinian communities across the occupied West Bank. On Sunday, residents of Hebron held a general strike to protest the killing of two Palestinians by Israeli forces a day earlier. Separately, Israeli forces shot and killed a Palestinian in the town of Azun Sunday. The violence came as Israeli media reported Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, has set aside approximately more than $830 million to fund 17 new settlements in the occupied West Bank over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, human rights groups are expressing grave concerns about the fate of jailed Palestinian political prisoner Marwan Barghouti after his son said he'd received news his father had been severely beaten and tortured by Israeli prison guards, leaving him physically shattered. In Sudan, the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group attacked a preschool, a hospital, and other sites in the state of South Kordofan Thursday, killing at least 116 people, including 46 children, according to reporting by Al Jazeera. The war between the RSF and the Sudanese military has killed at least 40,000 people and displaced 12 million since 2023, though aid groups say the true death toll could be more than three times higher. Hundreds of people have fled heavy fighting in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo after M23 rebels clash with Congolese forces backed by thousands of Burundian soldiers. The violence erupted in the Ruzizi Plain near the DRC's border with Rwanda and Burundi. Survivors describe bombs falling on civilians fleeing an initial attack on their communities.
We were about to climb the mountain just after the Luberisi Bridge. When we arrived at the first houses of Mutaruli, those who were in front and behind us weren't hit, but us who were in the middle, that's where the bomb fell in succession. The first, the second, and the third. That's when some people started falling and others died on the spot. I was injured and thought it was only me, but my child who was on my back was also hit.
The fighting came just one day after President Trump hosted the leaders of the DRC and Rwanda in Washington, D.C. at the U.S. Institute of Peace, which the State Department has renamed the Donald J. Trump Institute of Peace, where they signed an agreement aimed at ending the decades-long conflict in the eastern DRC. Trump declared he'd brought peace to the region, describing it as a glorious triumph and a miracle. Russia launched a massive wave of drone and missile strikes on Ukraine over the weekend that officials in Kyiv are calling one of the most devastating attacks since Russia's full-scale invasion nearly 4 years ago. The strikes damaged power facilities in eight Ukrainian regions and once again severed outside power to the Zaporizhzhia power plant, the largest nuclear plant in Europe, forcing officials to use backup diesel generators to prevent a nuclear disaster. This is Elena Chomik, who witnessed a Russian strike that triggered a fire in a warehouse near her home near Kyiv.
We critically need to be helped with weapons, for the world to unite, for the world to help us, to be heard, for Mr. Trump to hear us, that he's being deceived, that he is being led into a delusion. You can't bargain with Russia. This is not the kind of country that will give in. If Ukraine falls, Russia will cling to something else. Look at what's happening with Georgia's Abkhazia, what they've turned this flourishing region into. They're doing this with Ukraine now.
On Sunday, President Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., blasted Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky over a corruption scandal and said the Trump administration might walk away from peace talks. His comments came as the Kremlin welcomed Trump's new national security strategy, which seeks to reestablish, quote, strategic stability with Russia. The document also claims Europe is facing the, quote, stark prospect of civilizational erasure and urges U.S. support for far-right anti-immigrant populists like AfD, that's the alternative for Germany, and Hungary's authoritarian leader, Viktor Orban. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments on whether President Trump has the authority to undo automatic citizenship for people born in the United States. President Trump signed an executive order on his first day back in office declaring children born to undocumented immigrants and to some temporary foreign residents would no longer be granted birthright citizenship. Vaccine advisors at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have voted against universal hepatitis B shots for newborns, recommending the vaccine only for infants born to women who test positive for the virus. The announcement reverses 35 years of CDC recommendations that all newborns receive the hepatitis B vaccine within 24 hours. Attorney General Pam Bondi is ordering the FBI to compile a list of what the Justice Department is calling domestic terrorist organizations. A memo obtained by journalist Ken Klippenstein says the DOJ's target is those expressing, quote, opposition to law and immigration enforcement, extreme views in favor of mass migration and open borders, adherence to radical gender ideology, as well as anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, and anti-Christianity. The memo echoes language in President Trump directive known as the NSPM-7 or National Security Presidential Memorandum 7, which Trump signed in September in the wake of the murder of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast with the investigative journalist Ken Klippenstein. Democratic Congressmember Adelita Grijalva of Arizona says she was attacked by masked ICE agents Friday as she tried to find out more information about a raid taking place at a restaurant in her district in Tucson, Arizona.
I was here. This is like the restaurant I come to literally once a week, and was sprayed in the face by a very aggressive agent, pushed around by others when I literally was not being aggressive. I was asking for clarification, which is my right as a member of Congress.
Adelita Grijalva is the first Latina to represent Arizona in Congress. She'll join us later in the broadcast. Meanwhile, Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara warned his police officers that they will be fired if they don't intervene when ICE agents use unlawful force. The Trump administration recently launched an immigration crackdown in the Twin Cities shortly after President Trump disparaged Minneapolis's Somali community, as well as its Congressmember Ilhan Omar, in a racist tirade, calling them all garbage. The Trump administration's changed the name of the nation's highest-ranking openly transgender official on her official portrait. Admiral Rachel Levine served for 4 years as President Biden's Assistant Secretary for Health and was the first transgender person to win Senate confirmation. Her official portrait is displayed at the Federal Department of Health and Human Services building after she was confirmed in 2021. Recently, the Trump administration removed Levine's name from her portrait and replaced it with her previous name. A startup funded by a venture capital firm with backing from President Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., has been awarded a $620 million contract from the Pentagon. That's according to reporting from the Financial Times. It's the largest ever government contract issued by the Pentagon's Office of Strategic Capital. Don Jr. joined the venture capital firm 1789 Capital as a partner last year, and since then, at least four companies backed by the firm have received government contracts. A federal judge in Florida has ordered the release of previously sealed grand jury documents from a federal investigation into the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein in the mid-2000s. Soon after the investigation ended, Epstein and federal prosecutors negotiated a non-prosecution agreement, which resulted in Epstein pleading guilty in Florida state court to relatively minor charges. Friday's ruling ordering the release of grand jury documents comes after Congress passed a law last month requiring the Justice Department to release all its files on Epstein by December 19th. We'll speak with Congressmember Adelita Grijalva later in the broadcast about this pending deadline. FIFA awarded President Trump the organization's new Peace Prize Friday at the 2026 World Cup draw. FIFA President Gianni Infantino presented Trump with a gold trophy with his name on it, saying, quote, you definitely deserve the first FIFA Peace Prize for your action, for what you've obtained in your way. Infantino is a close ally of Trump and has been a frequent visitor to the Oval Office. FIFA also established an office at Trump Tower in Manhattan. And President Trump hosted the annual Kennedy Center honors on Sunday night after completing his takeover of the once venerable arts institution in Washington, D.C. The Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts was established by Congress and has been run by a bipartisan board since its opening in 1971 until Trump came into office and upended that in February when he moved to install his loyalists in key positions and make himself chair. On Sunday, CBS carried a live broadcast of the ceremony in which Trump paid tribute to his handpicked award winners, musicians George Strait and Gloria Gaynor, the rock band Kiss, and actor Sylvester Stallone, and Broadway actor Michael Crawford, the original Phantom in The Phantom of the Opera. And a correction. Since September, the Pentagon claims it's struck at least 22 boats in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific, not 12. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Pressure's growing on the Trump administration to release video of a U.S. airstrike on September 2nd that killed two men who were left shipwrecked in the Caribbean after an earlier U.S. strike on the vessel that killed nine people. The Trump administration claims all the passengers on the boat were involved in drug trafficking, but offered no proof. CNN's reporting that Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley told lawmakers last week the boat planned to link up with another larger vessel that was bound not for the United States, but for Suriname. On Sunday, Democratic Representative Adam Smith of Washington State spoke to ABC News.
There were two survivors on an overturned boat, and Senator Cotton's description of it is simply not accurate. When they were finally taken out, they weren't trying to flip the boat over. The boat was clearly incapacitated. A tiny portion of it remained capsized, the bow of the boat. They had no communications device. Certainly, they were unarmed. Any claim that the drugs had somehow survived that attack is hard to really square with what we saw. So it was deeply disturbing. It did not appear that these two survivors were in any position to continue the fight.
Congressman Adam Smith's comments came a day after Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth spoke at the Reagan Library at the Reagan National Defense Forum in Simi Valley, California. He defended the strike on the shipwrecked men and was questioned about releasing the strike video.
So, Mr. Secretary, you will be releasing that full video.
We are reviewing it right now.
Is that a yes or no?
That is, the most important thing to me are the ongoing operations in the Caribbean with our folks that use bespoke capabilities, techniques, procedures in the process. I'm way more interested in protecting that than anything else. So we're reviewing the process and we'll see.
Hegseth's comments contradict President Trump, who was questioned about releasing the video last week.
Mr. President, you released video of that first boat strike on September 2nd, but not the second video. Will you release video of that strike so that the American people can see for themselves what happened?
I don't know what they have, but whatever they have, we'd certainly release. No problem.
Since September, the Pentagon struck at least 22 boats in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific. We're joined now by Reed Brody, war crimes prosecutor, member of the International Commission of Jurists, and author of the book To Catch a Dictator, The Pursuit and Trial of Hussein Habré. Welcome back to Democracy
Thanks,
Now,
Amy.
Reed. Are these war crimes?
Well, if this was a war, they would be war crimes. But because it's not a war, it's murder. I mean, in order to have a war, you need to be actually fighting against either another country or an organized armed group. And there has to be a level of conflict such that it is an armed conflict. President Trump has taken a metaphor, the war on drugs or the war against narcos, and tried to convert it into an actual war. But, you know, that's no more valid than saying, okay, we're fighting a war on corruption so we can target alleged insider traders, or we're fighting a war on disinformation so we can Trump can bomb the BBC. I mean, this is, I mean, let's remember that this is a law enforcement operation. The United States can make drug smuggling a crime, as we have. We can interdict these people. We can bring them to the United States. We can prosecute them. If they're found guilty, they go to jail. What we can't do, however, is just go around the world dropping bombs on ships and on people without any evidence of any wrongdoing, without any trial, and without any evidence that they are posing a threat to anybody.
Let me go back to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth speaking at the Reagan National Defense Forum at the Reagan Library in California.
The days in which these narco-terrorists, designated terror organizations, operate freely in our hemisphere are over. These narco-terrorists are the Al-Qaeda of our hemisphere, and we are hunting them with the same sophistication and precision that we hunted Al-Qaeda. We are tracking them. We are killing them. And we will keep killing them so long as they are poisoning our people with narcotics so lethal that they're tantamount to chemical weapons.
Reed Brody.
Look, right now as we speak, the former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, is facing trial at the International Criminal Court in The Hague for doing exactly what President Trump and Secretary Hegseth have done, killing suspected drug dealers without due process. What we are doing here is murder on the high seas. If these were, if these crimes were being committed in the territorial waters of a country that was a party to the International Criminal Court, the prosecutor could actually bring charges against Donald Trump, Pete Hegseth, and all the people down the chain of command for extrajudicial, not for war crimes, because it's not a war, but for murder, for extrajudicial executions.
So let me ask you, this happening at the same time last week that President Trump pardoned and released Juan Orlando Hernandez. Now, Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, was found guilty in a U.S. court. His brother had been found guilty a few years before. His brother sentenced to life in prison. Juan Orlando Hernandez sentenced something like 45, 46 years in prison in a U.S. jail for trafficking cocaine into the United States, using all the levers of the power of the state as president, the military, the police, and facilitating cocaine coming into this country. And quoted in the trial, were those who said, he said, we are going to stuff cocaine up the noses of those gringos.
Yeah, I mean, look, these strikes are crimes within an illegal operation in the service of what is really a hoax. I mean, if President Trump was concerned about drugs, I mean, Venezuela accounts for a very small portion of drugs coming into the United States. I mean, most of the fentanyl and other drugs come in on land routes through Mexico, et cetera. I mean, this is no more a war on drugs than, you know, sending National Guard into democratic cities is about fighting crime. Or, you know, attacking free speech on campuses is about, protecting from anti-Semitism. I mean, they're just making this stuff up. And basically, they're forcing the debate into, their own terms.
So, finally, is the U.S., is Trump trying to trigger a Venezuelan Gulf of Tonkin, an excuse for the U.S. to invade Venezuela, the country with the largest oil reserves in the world?
Look, I've got no truck for Nicolas Maduro. I mean, this is a man who, who stole elections, who crushes dissent and everything. But what it does appear to be is all of this is a pretext. We're bullying. This is a psychological operation. I don't know that Trump and the MAGA base will actually go in guns a-blazing to Venezuela. But I think that this is not about drugs. I think this is about bullying and intimidating the Venezuelan government.
Reed Brody, thanks so much for being with us. War crimes prosecutor, member of the International Commission of Jurists, author of the book To Catch a Dictator, The Pursuit and Trial of Hissein Habre. To see our interview on that book, go to democracynow.org. Next up, we go to Tucson, Arizona, where ICE agents pepper sprayed a newly sworn in Congress member. Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, as local residents protested yet another ICE raid. Stay with us. Performing When First Unto This Country at the Brooklyn Folk Festival in November. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Arizona, where Democratic Congressmember Adelita Grijalva of Arizona says she was pepper sprayed by masked ICE agents as she tried to find out more information about a raid on a popular restaurant in her district in Tucson. Grijalva is the first Latina to represent Arizona in Congress. She posted this video of herself as she identified herself to the agents before they pepper sprayed her.
Hail a city member of Congress.
You need to calm down. You guys need to calm down and get out. You need to get out. You need to get out.
Get out of the way. You guys need to clear now.
The video posted by Congressmember Grijalva slows down the final scene and repeats the part where an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer pepper sprays her. Grijalva joins us now for more. She last joined us right after she was sworn in last month to succeed her father, former Congressmember Raul Grijalva, after a 50-day delay, as she then became the 218th signatory on the bipartisan Epstein Files Transparency Act, which compels the Justice Department, FBI, and federal prosecutors to disclose the documents by December 19th. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Congressmember Grijalva, thanks so much for being with us. Let's start with what happened on Friday. Tell us exactly where you are, what was the establishment that was being raided, and what happened to you?
Yeah, so that's a restaurant I go to all the time. It's Taco Guido. I was literally on my way there for lunch with three of my members of my team, and we got a call turning down that corner saying, hey, something's going on at Taco Guido. There's like an ICE raid. So you could see it. I mean, the road was blocked. I pulled off into another establishment and walked over to try to find out what was going on. I asked questions. I introduced myself as a member of Congress. I believe that it is my job. Oversight is my job. It's not optional. And I was trying to ensure people's rights were protected. And except for one individual, everybody else, it didn't matter if I was a member of Congress or not. They were trying to incite some sort of riot because there was no reason at that point for them to still be there. So at the part of the video where I said, you all need to go, right before that, there was a agent that said, if you all need to move and we'll get out of here. So once I asked everyone to move, I was trying to de-escalate the situation. So the road was clear. That's why I kept saying, okay, y'all need to go now. Y'all need to go now. You know, our community deserves safety, clarity, due process. And I'm going to continue to demand answers about who was targeted and why this location was chosen and whether protocols were followed because Southern Arizona elected me to stand up for them.
So what has ICE responded or the federal government responded to the your pepper spraying?
Oh, they said I wasn't pepper sprayed. So that was the response, that I wasn't pepper sprayed, that this was a long investigation. And it's literally what we were asking, and I was asking, is what is going on here? So the video speaks for itself. I was pepper sprayed, and then there was gas. And it was, I mean, you can see officers, Telemundo was there, Univision was there. There were other stations there. You can see officers in other videos clearly shooting a spray right at people's eyeline.